I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
KFI AM 640. You're listening to the John and Ken Show on demand on the iHeartRadio app. OJ's almost died.
What?
Radar Online says doctors had to insert a stent in his heart during life or death surgery.
What did I say last hour about murderers?
Ah, look at that. How big a party would that be if he finally dies? So he's got a stent to keep his arteries clear. They said he cheated death.
Oh, you're right. OJ, heart attack drama.
My heart is giving out, OJ confided to a friend. He's terrified that he's going to die soon from a massive heart attack.
He is in his 70s, right?
75.
Look, he made the news the other day for attacking Clarence Thomas over affirmative action. There's two other stories when you put in OJ's name. But yeah, that's the top one. 5 hours ago, OJ heart attack drama. Doctors insert stent in his heart during life or death surgery as it's revealed he cheated death. Yeah.
Who's this doctor saving OJ's life?
Well,
can we ring him up on charges?
Hippocratic oath and all that.
Oh, my God. That's terrible. Do away with that oath.
We got Friday going here on the John and Ken Show, which means one thing. Next hour, the return of the Moistline folk. These are groups of people, not gang members, groups of people that reach out to us using either the iHeartRadio app or the Moistline number. We have not played any Moistline calls in about 2 weeks, so we'll see what's in the collection for today coming up at 3:20 and at the end of the show at 3:50. Big story this week, which really happened on June 24th, but the video didn't become more public. It's a video taken by bystanders, including one of the women in the story, and body cam from the police officers involved. This is a couple of LA County Sheriff's deputies. We do not know their names yet. They are on reassignment. They were dispatched to a grocery store with a possible robbery in progress, and they found a man who matched the suspect's description in the parking lot. As the man was being detained by deputies, a woman was filming the arrest on her phone. One of the deputies walks over to the woman, reaches for her arm in an attempt to take the phone, and eventually ends up throwing her on the ground. The footage shows the deputy arguing with the woman as he detains her, threatening to punch her in the face. He then pepper sprays her face and handcuffs her. Now, if that was the whole thing to the story, you might be a little bit like, uh-oh, that looks over the top. But we have learned that the woman is also a suspect in the shoplifting story. We have learned that the woman and the man may have assaulted some security guards at the store. We have learned that the woman may have taken a swing at one of the police officers. So when you get all these things and put them together, you realize it's a muddier story than it looks just from reading a short description.
So why did the L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna hold an emergency press conference on less than an hour's notice to give the impression that the cops had done a terrible thing? Not only that, but he had alerted all the anti-police civil rights groups in the area who showed up ready to rumble.
Did you see in the updated story in the El Segundo Times that appeared, I guess it was early yesterday, basically, it almost seems like he walked back Wednesday's news conference a little bit to say, now we need to take a look at everything that happened, including what happened before the video was taken, what happened after the video was taken. And he even threw in the fact that right now his sheriff's deputies, particularly in the Lancaster area, are overworked and stressed out.
Yeah, well, it was hard not to watch Luna's performance and not think of his predecessor, Alex Villanueva, and how he would have handled this entire story. Well, we have Alex Villanueva on the line here. We're going to talk to him about it. Alex, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Oh, great.
What went on here? Because Luna certainly gave the impression to the whole world that we had two violent racist cops that needed to be dealt with. And it looks like the real story says something much different.
Well, what you have here is Luna's first bid at his next re-election campaign ad. I'm going after those rogue deputies, and I'll throw them all under the bus. Facts don't matter, because that's the people who got him into office, and he's going to play to that crowd. And to the hell with the welfare of, or actually reality, because we know that there was a whole lot more information that he had in his possession from the very beginning. The altercation in the store caught on the surveillance in the store. The radio traffic to the deputies, the 911 call received by Lancaster Station, the mobile digital computer dispatch description of the crime that was given to the deputies, and they responded, lights and sirens of the place as a robbery in progress. All that information would have painted a more complete story so the public could have an informed opinion. But he gave a very truncated, oh, look at the bad deputies, because it served his political interest. That's it.
That's what bothered me as we were going through this yesterday, is he had this information for 12 days and chose to go and do that press conference, which means he was intentionally misleading the public. Intentionally, because he should have known better at this point.
Yes, and then all the body-worn camera footage that preceded the use of force, the interaction, the discussion with the two subjects, that's valuable information. The public would probably have liked to have heard to have a little more informed opinion, but he deliberately, you're right, misled the public.
And all to pander to the activist groups?
That's exactly what he's doing. He's pandering to them because he's lost the support and respect. Well, he never had the support of the department to begin with. But now, and again, you go to, they're now admitting they are missing over 1,200 deputies vacant. They can't attract people to the job. Then now they're going to pay this recruiting firm $1.5 million to convince people to sign up so your boss can throw you under the bus. I mean, imagine what kind of a recruitment strategy that is.
I imagine you still have your sources in the department that tell you stuff.
Oh, yes. I get an awful lot of information on an hourly basis sometimes.
What's the morale like? You're implying it's not good.
It's rock bottom. Everyone's heading to the exits. We have record numbers of early retirements, lateral transfers to other agencies. And I think he's hired a grand total of 163 people so far under his belt. At the same time, my first year in office, we hired 1,100 deputies, and the line was going out the building.
Well,
huge difference.
Isn't this what the anti-police board of supervisors wants?
Pretty much, because they want to downsize and degrade the capacity of the department, because their strategy is shift the budget towards the nonprofits and all their buddies in the political world, and it's going to be at the expense of law enforcement. That's the last thing that they haven't been able to tap and destroy, and now they're under the last one.
Well, so how do you think this will play out, this story? Will we get a chance as more information comes forward? Don't you think these cops will be proven to not necessarily have used excessive force?
That'll be buried on the third page of the last article that comes out maybe a year from now. Oh, by the way, yeah, it turns out that the force was either within policy or maybe it had been, you know, referral to additional training, perhaps, or minor level of discipline if they found it violated some policy. But he threw out right at the beginning, oh, everything is on the table, including getting fired. That's not an objective investigation.
Yeah, you famously called him a puppet during the campaign. Who's pulling the strings on this? Is he doing this on his own to demean,
to appease the activists, right?
Or does he get phone calls from the supervisor saying, "Hey, you better jump in front of this and calm the activists down and throw your guys under the bus"?
Well, he's pretty much being told what to do, if and when he ever decides to do something. Because look at how many things that have happened in the first 7 months where he should have stood up and said, "Hey, I need to state my opinion on the budget, on swiping out my deputies to work probation, on the deputy was rammed by a car, on the mass shooting in Carson," all these things that are big stuff. He hadn't heard crickets from him. He pops out of the woodwork, I guess from under his desk where he was hiding, and said, "Hey, I'm going to throw these two deputies under the bus. Look at me." And then he doesn't wear a uniform, neither does the undersheriff, neither does the assistant sheriff. Alarming, because what he's telegraphing is, "I'm not one of them. I'm the reformer, so I'm just going to hold them accountable. Don't hold me accountable." A horrible message of leadership right there.
I have to imagine, like you said, that the sheriff's deputies feel awfully depressed to have a leader like this.
It's not a leader. It's a puppet. It's someone who's going to do whatever the board wants. Did you hear him say a word when they're talking about closing Men's Central Jail? He didn't say a peep. And I think he should have something to say about that. It's like his responsibility and the huge impact to public safety. I mean, this guy is MIA in all the critical things. And in a use of force that is obviously questionable and needs to be investigated thoroughly, then he comes out with a dog and pony show.
How would you
between Gascon and the Board of Supervisors and now this sheriff? I mean, they really are full charge to dismantle the criminal justice system in the county, aren't they?
They are. It's a trifecta from hell. But voters, you know what? You get the government you deserve. You didn't pay attention to what they were advertising when they campaigned. You bought into it. They're in office now. And now everyone's safety is being jeopardized. Look at all these crimes in progress, these takeovers, these looting, all these different things that are happening. In fact, the couple there, they were probably indignant. I'm just guessing here, my opinion, indignant that they were being detained for something they may have been accustomed to be doing. Like, how dare you?
That's right. Yeah, nobody usually stops us.
I hadn't thought of that.
You know this case will get kicked anyway. What are you doing?
They probably had been doing this for a long time. It's like, what are you talking about? What, we're getting detained for shoplifting? That's legal.
It's absurd. It's absurd.
Who are you?
Yeah, we're laughing, but it's really sad. There you go. Well, thank you for coming on. I know you're on social media. Can you tell the audience where they can find you?
Yeah, Sheriff Villanueva 33. On Facebook, Instagram, every Wednesday from 11 to 12, we go live. And then on CRN Talk, around 10 to 11, Monday through Friday. And we dissect bad politicians and bad journalists.
Well, you got a lot of stuff, ammunition there. Thanks for talking to us.
You got it.
All right. That's former L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva. We got his take on what happened, especially the response from the current L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna to the situation out of Lancaster with two sheriff's deputies. And again, it's important to remember, they're called to the scene of robbery in progress and a possible assault. So, you know, when they get there, they're on guard that this could get really ugly. They don't know anything about weapons or what could happen. And so eventually they get into altercation with this couple and trying to detain them. And everything's focused on the fact that the woman eventually got thrown to the ground by one of the deputies. But there was a lot more to the story, including the fact that they could be shoplifters. They could have assaulted somebody in the store and they could have assaulted the deputy, too. So we'll see how this plays out from Luna.
What was that old 60s song, "I'm Your Puppet"?
Yeah, Bobby Purify.
Bobby Purify. Eric, can you dig that up? That could be, I want to hear, "I'm Your Puppet" every time Luna pops up in the news. Yeah. Make that his theme.
Coming up next, your chance at some money. We will have another keyword revealed. KFI AM 640 live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
I'm your puppet. There you go.
There it is, Bobby Purify. Who I also thought of, remember the Fifth Dimension had a song too.
What was that?
I'm Your Puppet Man, I think.
I'm Your Puppet. I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that wasn't as big a hit for them. I always liked the Fifth Dimension though, but
yeah.
But that's what we're going to play when we talk about the LA County Sheriff, Robert Luna, because as we just talked to former LA County Sheriff Alex Villanueva, that's what he is. He is the puppet of the Board of Supervisors, George Gascon, the LA County DA. And together, they want to end imprisonment.
And all the anti-cop activists.
Right.
I can't believe the turnout of activists that showed up so quickly to protest proper police action.
Now, and they dominate the coverage is the problem.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that show up at the LA City Council meetings, you know, demanding people resign, demanding this and that and that. And they don't represent that big a percentage. But they're loud, they're noisy, and they have no jobs, apparently. So this is what they do, go around protesting things. We have an update now on Mayor Bassetti's Inside Safe, John.
Yes.
A report came out this week, and here's the lead. 1,400 people have been placed in Inside Safe motels by city officials. What is the number that have been moved into permanent housing? Are you ready? 77. 6%.
77 out of the 42,000 homeless people that are laying on LA city streets.
Yeah, is that the new number? The new count was 40?
I think it was, right?
I think it was
75 for the county and 42 at least here in LA city.
Right.
And she got 77 of them in permanent housing?
Whoa. Yes.
Hey.
The part that really got me the accountant in me. They have spent $40 million on the program. I did the math. To get the 1,400 people inside motels, that's almost $28,000 a person. That's a lot of money. And it's only been in 6 months of this.
Just give them a check. They'll buy $28,000 worth of drugs and probably overdose.
Fentanyl, yeah. She appeared on something called LAS Public Affairs Show, Air Talk.
That's public radio. They gave themselves a new name.
And she said she's blaming the federal government. They have rules that requires lots of documentation before someone can be housed in permanent housing.
What a joke.
And thousands of permanent supportive housing beds are empty because we can't get through the red tape. That's what she said.
Oh, nonsense.
You literally have to prove income eligibility. In other words, that you're poor enough, that you've been in a tent. Oh. Why do I need to do that? She said.
That's nonsense. We passed that proposition in 2017, I think. 2016?
You're talking about the taxes
proposition
for
age?
Permanent
for permanent housing.
The one where they started to spend $400,000 in an apartment?
And then it turned out to be $800,000 an apartment?
Right.
And wait a second. Now we're hearing about red tape? What is she talking about?
Federal government red tape.
Well,
I guess they get some of the funding from the feds, right? Not just from that proposition.
Right, I know. But shouldn't that have been addressed at the time that we agreed to pay the billions of dollars for these new taxes?
This is what government people do. They just blame some other bureaucracy.
That's a whole lot of nonsense. They could fix that. You know, Bonin tried to pull that when he would give his speeches on the West Side. So fix it. Whatever the problem is, change the rules. Cut the red tape. You can do it. She claimed that's what she was going to do. And didn't she throw out some bogus statistic a few weeks ago that they had actually helped 14,000 people? Now it turns out it's 1,400. Remember? Because I remember saying it's like, hey, if that 14,000 is true, that sounds like one third of the homeless have been removed. And it didn't seem that way.
So $40 million has been spent to house 1,400 people in LA motels. Only 6% have landed permanent housing. That's the preliminary update that came out this week.
I didn't hear her talk about federal red tape once. When she was running for mayor.
It's a new excuse,
right? Did she not know it was a problem? Yeah, it's just a stupid excuse. That is garbage.
Now we bring you this story on the homeless. It looks like it did happen in L.A. ABC 7 reporter Josh Haskell. There are some homeless people that are getting a little ingenious, perhaps, in where they seek shelter. Listen to this story from Channel 7.
We walk over them every day, underground utility vaults. But could somebody be inside? This video, captured by the Japanese American National Museum, shows a homeless man put his belongings inside the vault on Alameda next to the museum, then climb inside and shut the door.
We don't know how long he or how many times he may have accessed that vault. It's certainly possible that he had been there other times.
Given the location of the vault, that's immediately under the museum, and the potential for a very severe incident. There's gas lines down there. There's electrical lines down there. A fire could have been started down there. We just have to be careful.
Utility vaults are supposed to be sealed. Clearly, this one's not. There's actually clothes down there, even enough room for someone to sleep.
It was Monday night when security guards at the Japanese American National Museum noticed the homeless man opening a different vault on Alameda and stuffing a backpack inside. That's when they called the LAPD to report a trespasser. And when the LAPD arrived, they located the man who was in his 30s. The suspect then hit one of the officers and was taken into custody. He had drugs on him and a plastic gun.
Our primary concern has to be that of the safety of our patrons, our visitors, our staff, our volunteers. So anything that that might affect that is something that we like to take seriously.
The museum tells Eyewitness News they've been in contact with the LADWP, who told them they plan to seal the two vaults.
And the LADWP just got back to me. They have sent a crew down here, so those vaults could be sealed in the near future.
Well, first thing I thought of is who's in favor of the homeless going underground? I am, but I guess these vaults are dangerous. Could blow up the lines.
So. Yeah, give them access to the gas valves underneath.
You can send them underground, but maybe not utility vaults.
Did you know that in Las Vegas they have 1,500 people living in the underground
tunnels? The tunnels. Yes, I did see that story, right?
Yeah.
Now, what are those tunnels used for? Do you know? I remember that story came out last year. I saw it, but I don't remember what the tunnels.
You know, I know somebody. One of my wife's nieces who works as a paramedic up in Las Vegas and has to go down in the tunnels to treat emergency cases.
Oh, no.
It's impossible to describe the hideousness down there. These are crazy people who haven't seen the light of day sometimes in years.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. As soon as I put in Las Vegas homeless, the next word that came up was tunnels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Homeless staying underground in Las Vegas share stories. 1,500 people living in them.
Yeah.
600 miles of tunnels in Las Vegas.
The police won't even go in there because these are the craziest, most violent, drug-addicted whack jobs.
Oh, yeah. They're referred to as mold people in this story.
Yeah.
Mold people. Oh, wow. I'm looking at a long story they did about them. I was going to say, was it a railroad track? I was trying to figure out what it was, these tunnels, why they're there.
I imagine.
One guy's been living in there for 12 years, they interviewed.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that they go
the
blind down
disgusting.
There.
Disgusting. Oh, wow. Oh, they're flood tunnels. That's what they are. That's what they're. Oh, well, that could be a problem if they had really heavy rain too recently. I wonder what that did to the mold people.
Might have washed a few out. I don't know where they. I don't know where it is. What does it go out to? Does it go out to the sea? Obviously.
I don't. All right. Oh, the pictures are really horrendous. When we come back, we're going to update you on that RV encampment in Sylmar. Remember that property we talked about? Channel 7 did an update on that story. You got to hear this. John and Ken, KFI AM 640 live everywhere. The iHeartRadio app.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days,
ooh,
it would have been
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
We're on the radio from 1 till 4, and then after 4 o'clock, listen to the John and Ken On Demand podcast and catch up on what you missed and listen to us all weekend. John and Ken On Demand podcast. Anything you missed.
Sounds like a party. We'll be there with you. We're going to be talking to the Tulare County DA after the news at 3 o'clock. His name is Tim Ward, and he wants as many people as he can to know about Senate Bill 94. That's the bill that could release murderers by the year, by 25 years after they've served. That would be sort of the idea behind the bill, is that's kind of the maximum punishment for murder.
The worst of the worst murderers would get out after 25 years.
You now, this see is where they start.
We told you.
The offense has to have occurred before June 5th of 1990, and if they served at least 25 years in custody, then they would be eligible for parole. But as you know, this is creepy crawly. They'll start with 1990, and then they'll move their way forward from there.
And every year there'll be an amended bill to move it up another 2 years, 5 years, until eventually there'll be no penalties for murdering somebody. That's where they're headed. And now, does Newsom pass this while he's running for president? Does he sign the bill?
Is he going to said that about so many things lately?
Well, that's look, you know, he's got a heart monitor that's in his office, and he is tracking Biden's heart rate at all times. Don't you think first thing in the morning when he gets up, he opens his eyes and right away he goes to his phone to see if Biden's still alive or did he die overnight?
Does he also have something that monitors the next time Biden flops and hits the ground with one of his falls? Or...
yeah, a sensor.
A flop sensor. All right, so we'll be talking to the DA coming up after 3. We'll bring in the Moist Line callers. Right now, we update you on a story I think we just did yesterday, although this story popped out last week from ABC 7. There's a property in Sylmar, which is part of L.A., with 20 RVs on the site. It is really horrendous. There's flies, feces. The neighborhood is basically being turned into a sewage system. They have updated the story. Channel 7 did. We're going to play you now the update from, and they're going after the owner of the property because this is not licensed as an RV park. A bunch of people in the neighborhood have signed a petition to have these RVs removed. There is sewage spilling into the streets. Here's the update from ABC 7 reporter Christiane Cordero.
The property in Sylmar with roughly 20 RVs has looked like a version of this for at least 2.5 years. Images from Google Maps shows RVs on the property in December 2020 and consistently until today. Today, the thought of leaving the lot without having a safe alternative keeps Jose up at night.
I just came to sleep, have a place to stay, something, but that's about it.
Do you have a toilet to use?
Yeah, I got everything.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right?
No.
Yeah.
So I just go to my sister, my brother, or something.
ABC 7 first reported on the property, and it's often backed up sewage system last week. We've been told the sewage spills into the streets and fills the neighborhood with a smell so strong that it has motivated 117 people to sign a petition. Still, Jose voluntarily lives here, paying $600 a month, while neighbors and some other tenants involuntarily endure life here. Yeah, this neighbor told us anonymously she sometimes can't go outside to eat or drink because the flies are all over. And that she has seen several children living in the RVs. A source from inside the property told us these are two of the 5 children who live here. One has special needs. No one outside of the property is surprised.
I did see a kid back there. And for me, my opinion, that's, I have 16 grandkids. To me, that's sort of like child abuse.
Hector, a neighbor, saw officials from Los Angeles and San Fernando stop by on Monday.
They were taking measurements, taking photographs. If anything's out of, I guess, citation-wise, they're going to follow up on it.
It's unclear if investigators stepped foot on the property. Doing so would require consent from the homeowner, who we're told is out of town. City officials from various agencies have told ABC7 the fact that this sits on private property adds a layer of complication. She says, I think that they need to do something urgent. For example, clear the trailers and put people up in a hotel or something, because it's not just dangerous for us. Those who live there are also in danger. ABC7 contacted LA City Council member Monica Rodriguez's office again ahead of today's story, requesting an on-camera interview. Her team instead sent a statement saying she's working with various agencies and cannot comment further based on pending legal charges. The criminal case has a hearing scheduled for July 19th. Jose fears what could happen between now and then, or whenever he leaves here.
Well, I will end up out of my car, throw LSD and sleep on the street of my car, and then...
So what would it take for you to feel like you're going into a better scenario than this?
I don't know. You just find a
get
stable
a job.
Place to stay.
Just as important as the people who you have heard from on camera are those who you haven't. We have heard from several people, both inside of that property and who live just outside of it, who say that they have felt threatened since bringing this issue to light.
That's the update from ABC7 about this collection of RVs in the backyard of a property. And again, we hear that thing, Sylmar, but it's right on the border of San Fernando, so it's like both governments are involved.
So good. Both governments could evict all those RVs, and they ought to put the owner in jail. Now, yesterday they said that she was in Guatemala, so it's, I wonder if she's not going to be showing up for the court date. What?
I doubt it.
How many public officials, police officers, knew this thing was growing over the past few years? How many of them?
It's been a couple of years and it's been there.
What is this nonsense? They can't set foot on the property? There's crimes being committed here. Those children are in danger. I mean, there's sewage backed up everywhere. So you could back up sewage to the point where 117 people are signing a petition. You have sewage flowing down the road. There's feces everywhere. There are flies everywhere. And no, we can't set foot on the property because it's private property. Just because you have private property, you're committing a lot of crimes there. You don't have carte blanche to turn the entire place into a toxic swamp. And it's these people's poo. It's all these people living in the RVs. It's their human waste that everybody's swimming in. The hell is going on?
Sounds like it's kind of a migrant neighborhood, but you still feel sorry for those people. I mean, if they actually live in real homes and they pay rent, they shouldn't have to have flies all over the place and the smell of stink.
There's so many illegal things going on. And this Monica Rodriguez... did she fall on her head? I'm working with the city attorney and the LAPD. What do you mean you're working with?
She sounds like that Yaroslavsky woman with the nude encampment there in Beverly Grove. Same thing, we're working.
I'm working. The violations are clear. Just get on the property, open your eyes, and start charging adults with crimes.
Tow those RVs out of there.
Take those children to child services. Well, don't do that.
Can you imagine what it looks like in some of those RVs?
Oh.
Especially if the toilets don't work, but people still have to go. I mean, in the middle of the night, you're not going to make your way to your sister's house. If you have to plunk one down, you're just going to go and fill up those public toilets you see in parks.
And did you hear the guy who said that there were officials from L.A. and San Fernando taking measurements, taking photographs,
pictures, yeah,
anything that requires citations? So they're going to hand out citations?
Yeah, that's effective.
Oh, hey, here's a sheet of paper. You did something wrong. First of all, the lady's in Guatemala. The hell?
We got a lot to come. We're going to be talking to the DA of Tulare County coming up after the news at 3 o'clock about this dangerous bill in Sacramento to let the murderers out, because we believe 25 years is plenty to serve if you've killed people. We'll get to that. We'll have the Moist line, a couple of rounds of it. And coming up next, probably the most disgusting airline story you have ever heard. John and Ken, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
On the radio, 1 till 4 after 4 o'clock, the iHeart app for the John and Ken on demand podcast.
Yes, all that. We'll have the Moist line next hour. This will be the first time we played the callers in a couple of weeks. Have no idea what's in that backed up drain pipe, but they'll become flooding out at 3:20.
It's It's like what's flooding Sylmar from the RV
camp.
Yeah,
from the RV encampment and all their sewage.
Very similar. Some of the same people, too.
So it might be a strange collection of different things from the Moistline callers at 3:20 and again in 1 hour.
You may not understand any of the references, but that's...
You may. I don't know.
Sometimes I forgot. I don't know what they're talking about.
Our kickoff story at 3:04 is our conversation with a county DA in California. He wants the public to know about a piece of legislation in Sacramento to let the murderers out. Anyone who committed murder before 1990, if we figured out that they served 25 years, that should be enough. Time to parole them. Forget about LWOP, right? Life without parole.
LWOP.
I mean, we started with, we don't like the death penalty. If you put him away for the rest of their natural lives, that should be good enough. No, that's going out the door, too. So how it's going to be 25 years. There's plenty of time. No matter how many people you killed, how horrendously you killed them, let them out. So we'll talk about that. 3:05. We have an airline travel story, which is really way up there and one of the most disgusting of all time. Habib Battah, that's his name. Habib Battah. He was flying from Paris to Toronto, Air France, June 30th. Sits down and strange smell coming from the footwell under he and his wife's seats shortly after takeoff. Said, that was a bit like manure. They're traveling with their two cats. Oh, Deborah Mark, two cats. Each in a separate carrier in the footwell in front of them. They were moving temporarily from Lebanon to the United States. He's some sort of journalist. Anyway, it was our first time traveling with the cats, and I'm thinking, oh, God, the cats have had an accident. I'm very embarrassed. Then I thought, maybe it's somebody's BO. I was sniffing and sniffing. And then he said, well, let me get the cats out of there. He crouched on the floor to check the animals on his hands and knees. The cats were fine, but what he did notice beneath the cat carriers was a wet stain on the floor, 20 inches long and 20 inches wide. He flagged down a flight attendant. He says, it smells like bleep. So she gave me some wet wipes. I started wiping, and then I looked at the wipe, and it was bloody red. And he kept wiping, and it kept coming up red. What the hell is this?
A bloody discharge.
After a while, one of the flight attendants said, you better go wash your hands, and here are some gloves. Apparently, a previous passenger had bloody diarrhea.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Oh, that's under barf right now.
And the stain was still there on the floor.
In the seat?
Well, well, it was on the floor.
Oh, yeah, but
God. But he was cleaning up the floor. Apparently, they must have... I'm thinking what happened was the airline may have cleaned the seats. I don't know how well, but they did not see the mess on the floor because they do, allegedly, clean the planes between uses. And it's easy to see maybe a stain on the seat, but maybe they didn't see the stuff under the...
So they had... It exploded in some guy's pants and...
The news came back from Air France headquarters. It was human blood. The day before, in a Paris to Boston flight, a male passenger suffered what they called a hemorrhage.
A hemorrhage?
Yes.
Out his rear end?
That's kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
That guy needs a check.
I'm going to puke.
I am too.
The cat carrier was stained as well with the blood. The poor cats were down there. He put them there not knowing. So he's working. We have audio of some of this. We have audio of the poor guy trying to clean up the mess. Let's listen in.
Not the guy who had the hemorrhage.
All this blood.
What happened?
A whole bag of blood.
Touch it.
I'll show you. All this is red blood. Look at all this. Red blood. All this is blood. Look at this blood. Look at all this blood. It's a hazard. I'm a journalist, so I document everything. And we're smelling blood.
He's traumatized.
Well, it gets worse. He did find out 3 days later that Air France confirmed the blood was mixed with the feces. And they could not move. They were offered two small bottles of Evian water. Two blankets, because the plane was full. They could not be moved. They had to sit there and smell the blood for 7 hours.
And they gave him two bottles of water.
That's all they got was some water? They didn't even give him booze?
That was the compensation.
That's what it says. And again, he thought that the rotten blood smelled a lot like manure. And then he found out a few days later, well, there was feces in there, too.
And he'd taken off his shoes at the start of the flight. And so there was blood on his socks. So you don't take off your shoes on a plane. Ay, ay, ay. So a little blood and feces stew there. And the cats.
Oh, the poor cats.
You know, the cats have a great sense of smell. Can you imagine what it was like for them?
As per procedure, a complete cleanup of the area was requested. The row of seats was made unavailable on the return flight from Boston to Paris. Right.
And then Air France is claiming, listen to this, the corporate goop. Air France says it understands and regrets the inconvenience caused by the situation. The risk of exposure to residual traces of blood on the carpet is low, if non-existent. That wasn't residual traces. When he rubbed it with the wipey, it came out all wet. I mean, all red. Wet and red.
No.
Oh, God. He says, I brought the blood home. They sent me home with a biohazard.
Like I said, one of the worst stories. I mean, if I can think of bodily fluids, I'd rather have people spit on me than have their blood and feces on me. That is worse, too.
And explosive, too, which means this guy had some terrible bacteria in him.
Yes.
And he probably did. He's dying.
It doesn't say here what happened to the patient. It could have been blood and diarrhea from an infection or something like colitis. Is what one expert said.
Now, they talked to a doctor who disagreed with the idea that it was a low to non-existent risk.
I don't agree with that,
said Dr. Richard Daywood. This is a very unhygienic situation. Unhygienic.
Look what they do when you're in a hospital and all the gowns and masks they wear. Yeah. It's because you have bodily fluids or anything airborne that could infect them. Don't tell me this is not a big deal.
You can get hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV.
All right, when we come back, we'll be talking to the district attorney of Tulare County up in Northern California. He wants to get the word out there to everybody. His name is Tim Ward, that there is a very dangerous bill in the legislature in Sacramento, which could let the murderers free. If you committed a murder before June 5th, 1990, that's the date, and you've served 25 years, you could get your chance at freedom. Doesn't matter what the sentence was.
Yes, my murder was before June 5th, 1990.
Okay, the one you did?
But nobody will ever know.
Johnny Ken, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
Somebody in radio. Deborah Mark live in the 24-hour KFI newsroom.
Hey, you've been listening to the John and Ken Show. You can always hear us live on KFI AM 640, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, and of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right.
Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.